All right, well, we're trying this out. And
okay.
Yay.
Yay. Are you recording now?
I am now recording.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm ready. I've got my pants on.
Pants are good. So I realize how much I say and it's such a concerted effort to not say and you know.
That is true. For me, the problem being Canadian is that I say, you know, like all the time. And that comes very naturally to me. So I get it.
I just realized that the woman that I wrote the OCD workbook sounds just like you, and she's a Pisces. Weird.
Maybe we're the same person, and I've just been leading a double life this whole time, and you just found me out.
It's true. I also because we have a theater background, it's easier for us to be conscious of saying, you know, and
Mm-hmm.
I was aggravated with myself because when I posted on Twitter to ask people to write for Stigma Fighters, I said, and I wanted to delete the video, and I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to leave it. I don't care.
You know, imperfection's beautiful. Why not just own it?
Yeah. Like, I'm eating whole wheat matzah, and I'm supposed to be gluten-free. Oh, well.
What is gluten-free? I don't get this issue with gluten, honestly. Like, why is it so bad for you? I mean, it tastes so good.
It's so good. I know.
I'm sure like a million people will hear this immediately be like, laundry list of all the reasons why we should be avoiding gluten. But I'm still at the end going to be like, yeah, but it tastes so good.
I mean, it does. I realize that it does help me to not eat it, but I'm sorry. I will never eat a gluten-free pizza. That's not ever going to happen.
Like, I've tried it. It's not worth it.
I would rather take a punch in the stomach from eating it than I just absolutely no. Nope.
Yeah. Honestly, and this whole, like, have you heard of zoodles? You know, zucchini noodles?
Oh, yes. Actually, the reason I've heard of zoodles is because it was on an episode of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt where this gay girl was making zoodles. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And then I found out. And I mean, to be fair, zucchini noodles are good, but they're not spaghetti.
You're not gonna convince me that Alfredo sauce is going to be good with zoodles. It's not going to happen. I want either linguine or fettuccine, all right? It's got to have, I mean, zucchini's got an I at the end of it, but that's not what I want.
Yeah, very good point. It's a vegetable. It is not a carbohydrate. If I wanted to eat a vegetable, it would be on the side. I don't feel like vegetables should be primary in terms of what you're eating. They should be, they are a complement to a meal.
I have a huge issue with people using mushrooms as, you know, for like replacing burgers. Like it is not the same thing. You cannot convince me in this world that a mushroom tastes the same as a burger patty. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. People keep saying portobello mushroom burgers. I'm like, that's not a, it's not. It's a mushroom.
Mushrooms are so mushy. They don't have the same texture. They just,
Have you ever tried the Impossible Burger?
My housemate actually cooked some of those not too long ago. I didn't try it, but she said it was all right. But I think it's mostly chickpea that they use in that.
Yeah, I tried it. I was not impressed. I know that my blood type is O positive, and I've heard that with my blood type, I am supposed to eat red meat, and I love burgers.
I think my blood type is, oh no, you need to stop eating that.
You like burgers or do you like
I like food in general, honestly. Food is like, I was thinking about this the other day when I was watching Birds of Prey and they were talking about, you know, men getting women diamonds and stuff like that. I'm like, you know, I'm not really into diamonds and jewelry and flowers and all that. Like, you really want to impress me, get me food. I'll love you forever, just feed me.
Yeah, food is amazing. And
I just need to start trolling, you know, around restaurants and chefs and get myself a chef for a boyfriend and have him cook for me all the time.
That sounds amazing.
My last boyfriend cooked for me all the time.
There you go.
I can cook, but I'm just super lazy and I don't want to.
And why should you have to if someone's good at it? I mean, that's their
problem. Well, and also I work. When you work, the last thing you want to do when you get home is like be on your feet for even 15 more minutes while you cook something up. Like, I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, speaking of cooking, I just put beef stew on the stove and
I've heard that.
Uh-huh. Food is so good. Food is
Amazing. Yeah, I've been making these. My dad is an incredible chef. Well, he's not a trained chef, but he's very passionate about cooking. And so we trade recipes, and he recently gave me a recipe for tortilla pizzas that I'm addicted to. And they take less than 15 minutes for me to make, and I eat like maybe two a day sometimes. The one I made last night had prosciutto on it.
Wow. Wait, so what do they have in them?
I mean, basically, all you need is a tortilla. Here, I'll explain, like we're on a cooking show, except you can't see the gestures as I do it. So pretend you can see me gesturing like whoever. Anyway, so what you do is you get a pan and you heat about a half a tablespoon half a teaspoon of olive oil in it on high. Heat it on high until the oil starts to kind of shimmer. Then take a paper towel, wipe the excess oil around the pan, and then kind of sop it out. Then you're going to take a tortilla, figure out whichever side is rough, whichever side is smooth. I like to put the rough side down in the pan personally. And then once you put it down in the pan, turn the heat down to about medium. While all this is happening, you should have the oven set to broil.
Okay.
So then that's going to be heating up while you're doing all this at the stove. And so with your tortilla in the pan, then you can lay down whatever sauce you want. I have a basic pizza marinara sauce that I like to use. Then cheese. I just use Parmesan and mozzarella. I'm very basic and very plain. And then whatever toppings you want. Like last night I had prosciutto, but typically I just do like pepperoni because I love my meat.
I probably do like spinach. Because I'm a big spinach fan.
Like you could do maybe like a white sauce of some kind, like an Alfredo sauce. I've done that as a base too, but I like I just have more marinara sauce right now.
I feel like everybody that is going to listen to this is going to be like, "Damn, I'm going to make some tortilla pizza."
And so, I got to finish this. So you guys should know. So you arrange all of what you want on your pizza in the pan. While it's on a medium heat, while your oven is broiling. Once that's done, I like to check the edge of the tortilla to see how kind of firm and stiff it is because you're heating it up, so it's gonna start crisping. I like my crust kind of crispy, so I like to make sure it's kind of hard to the touch. Then if your oven is big enough, go ahead and stick the whole pan with the pizza in it in your oven. And you're going to only keep it in there for about 2 to 4 minutes. Just like depends on how like melted and crispy you want your pizza to be. You can't fit your saucepan in. Like I can't do that in my oven. My oven's kind of small. I transfer my tortilla pizza. I just slide it right out of the pan onto a metal sheet because it's just oil on the bottom. So it's not going to stick. You should be able to slide it off very easily. And like I said, 2 to 4 minutes in the oven, and then you're done, and it's ready to serve. And it's basically a flatbread pizza.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine. He does like what he calls sort of pizza burritos, where he'll basically do the same thing but assemble it for a microwave. And I can't remember how long he microwaves it for, but then he rolls it up, or you can kind of fold it in half omelet style and eat it like a quesadilla or whatever.
I need to start making, there was this black bean quesadilla that I made that my friend made out. It was like black beans, cheddar, like cheddar jack or whatever, like this pepper jack.
Mm-hmm.
Red onions, which I normally don't like, but really work in this.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make rice and beans? Yeah.
What's that?
That's the chili. No, it's beef stew, sorry.
So, Sarah, I got a question for you.
Okay, I'm coming. Yes.
Is this your first podcast recording during quarantine?
Yes, guys, stop. Yes, it is my first podcast during quarantine.
How are you doing during quarantine? I know you got kids home.
I feel very bored.
Like, I understand we're supposed to be like social distancing and all that stuff, but it's a lot. And I feel like, you know, like we were talking about this morning, I hit this like threshold of depression where it's just sad. It's really, you feel like you, like, we're not going anywhere. And I typically, like, because I'm introverted, I don't go a lot of places, but I'm like, I can't, even if I wanted to, I couldn't.
Yeah. I totally get that.
How do you feel?
I mean, it's slightly different for me, of course, because I don't have two kids. You know, for a while it was okay because I am introverted and I also deal with social anxiety. So
I just wanted to say yes. Go ahead.
Well, like, for once, I'm in a climate where, you know, my social anxiety is kind of becoming a bit of a superpower. You know, it's finally okay for me to not want to be near people, whereas in the past, I've kind of been sort of pushed and shamed into, you know, proximity with people when I don't want to be near people. So I'm kind of loving the social distancing thing personally, but I do not like self-isolation and quarantine. And especially being single, you know, with my depression, I get bouts of loneliness. And like I was thinking this morning, the last time I had a date was in August last year. And don't even get me started on physical intimacy, because I don't even remember the last time somebody kissed me. So it's, and now I joke with my mom, I'm like, my pickup line should be, want to get within 6 feet of this, but it's serious.
That is the best. You should make a list of like quarantine pickup lines.
Quarantine pickup lines. Want to get within 6 feet of this? Hey, okay, I can sanitize you for you.
Go get Neil for me, please. See, they're always hungry. They always want something. And it's super intense now because, like, my patience is limited, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not, like, I can't really go in the other room because someone's going to be like, I'm hungry. I want something. I'm bored. Whatever, you know?
I'm just out of curiosity. Are your kids fairly self-sufficient?
No.
Do you see this as like an opportunity to teach them about self-sufficiency?
I think you should do a seminar on this because
I'm not a parent, and I know that some parents are going to be like, shut up, don't judge my parenting. And I'm not. It's just something that I think about as a teacher when I see kids. There's something that we learned about in training that I went to. It's called learned helplessness. And it's where kids see adults doing things for them. And they think that if they act helpless and they ask for help all the time, then you're going to constantly do the things for them. So what we started doing at work is when a kid asks for something, we guide them through the steps of what needs to be done. So they learn as they go. And then the next time they come and ask you for that same thing, you could say, remember how I showed you? Why don't you go do that right now?
That is a really good idea. Samara, we're doing a podcast, so you can't do that in here.
I mean, it's so easy as, you know, I see as parents, you know, you want to take care of your kids. You want to, you know, some ways of showing love is by doing these little things for them when they ask for help. But at the same time, you got to ask yourselves, when they grow up and go to college, you know, do you want your kid to be that kid who has no idea how to do their own laundry?
No.
I met those kids in college, and boy, did I judge the fuck out of them.
Yeah, well, I still don't separate my colors and whites, because why?
Oh, I've never done that.
I actually, like, it's so funny. So Neil and I got into a disagreement because his parents gave him money, and I'm totally throwing him under the bus, but he knows. His parents gave him money to buy a washer dryer, and he used that money for a video game conference. And I was like,
oh my God,
I was so mad. And I'm like, guess what? Your punishment is you're doing laundry for the rest of the year. I'm not touching that washer dryer. Like, first I was like, first of all, you get that washer dryer and you have 7 days to do it.
Well, and that's like basically stealing. Basically stealing from his parents. That's not okay.
No, it's not. So I was like, I don't care how you figure it out. Figure out how to get a washer dryer on Craigslist. You're doing it. And you're doing laundry for the rest of the year. And I haven't touched the washer dryer. He's been doing laundry.
Yeah, you got to learn how to, well, not you got to learn, but we have to help each other learn how to stand on our own two feet. I mean, like, we can offer support, of course, but you can't expect everybody to do everything for you. You got to learn how to do some things yourself, you know?
Yeah, and I think emotionally, I was not in a good place to individuate for my parents because of that learned helplessness thing. Like, my mom and I had this super codependent dynamic, and it took me, like, I would say from 22 to 25 or 20, even 27, to kind of be like, I can do this by myself. Like, I don't need to emotionally rely on my mom, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My last therapy session, I had a therapy session with my mother, and we kind of had that argument where I had to be like, look, you got to let me figure some things out on my own without interfering, you know? Like, and, you know, then there comes that line where for me, it was that I want to be able to talk about the things that upset me and the things that are going wrong without being automatically offered help, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you just want to vent sometimes, and you want the other person to say, that really sucks. I am so sorry. You know, you don't want them automatically going, okay, well, we're going to do this. You can do that. You could do that. This can fix that, you know, because then it's just like that's not actually helping me. That's just, you know, I still feel all the emotions, and now I feel even more overwhelmed by the steps you're giving me to do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like,
I'm saying, you know, so much right now. Oh my God.
I feel like, yeah, there is a difference. Sometimes we don't want solutions. Sometimes we need to come to the solution by venting. But then there's a difference, because there are some friends that just complain and complain and don't want to fix their problem. Yeah. And you know those people, and it's frustrating, right? Because you're like, well,
I definitely am one of those people sometimes. Sometimes all I want to do is just bitch about the issue, and I don't want to do anything about it. I just want to bitch, you know?
I think we all do that sometimes, but yeah. I don't feel like you're like that 100% of the time. You know what I mean? Like, some people just get into this pattern where, and I do it too, but some people get into the pattern where that they just want to be, not that they want to be, but like, they don't know how to be anything else but miserable.
Yeah, it's sort of, it's like a borderline personality disorder thing where you lose the ability to experience joy. I only know this because I watched an episode of The Sopranos where Tony Soprano's therapist diagnosed his mother with this. So I'm like thinking about that now. It's like, oh, you're incapable of feeling joy. That's painful.
Yeah, definitely that is a symptom of borderline. I've seen it in friends that have borderline. And like, you know, it's like you're doing these self-destructive behaviors just to feel something.
And yeah.
And like, I get that from a depression standpoint, where like the worst feeling is the absence of feeling.
Absolutely. Indifference is the opposite of love. And it's often more painful than hatred or anger. Like, sometimes it's so much better to have somebody yell at you than to have them just look at you and say, I don't care.
Yeah, that hurts. That hurts so, so much, because you are still emotionally invested in that person and they don't care about you. And it is extremely painful.
Disconnection is more painful, you know. I think humans, a lot of us, especially when it comes to like romantic relationships and such, we get really freaked out by the thought of creating connections, because once you create a connection, it's so painful to sever that, no matter the circumstances, even if
it's toxic. Exactly.
Yeah. The most toxic relationships on the planet, you know, and you see it in TV, films, I read it in books, you know, somebody could be hitting the other person, treating them like absolute garbage, but the other person will still feel they have to be there. And it's because the disconnection is often way more terrifying than the connection itself.
That is so true. And so so you know the attachment styles, right?
Bring me up to date.
Okay, so there's secure attachment, there's anxious attachment, and then there's avoidant attachment. Have you heard of this?
Mm-hmm. No, but I am immediately curious.
Okay, I think you're going to dig this. So basically, the goal is to be securely attached. And a securely attached person, whether it's in a friendship or romantic relationship, feels independent and they feel confident that their partner is going to be there because they feel secure in the relationship and in themselves.
So that's like the goal, I think, for me, is to feel a secure attachment with someone.
I definitely am not that.
So what are you?
I'll tell you, I believe I am anxious attachment. And anxious attachment is like you're scared that people are going to leave you or abandon you. You are constantly seeking reassurance that they're going to stay. There's like an element of codependency in anxious attachment because you're seeking approval.
That sounds like my past relationships. That I see myself in the past having been like that. But I think I feel like I've learned the lessons. So I hope I'm more secure, but I do admit to having been anxious.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in my current relationship, I feel securely attached, which because I don't feel like there's ambiguity. Like I was, I was reading on the pattern that
such a good app.
So good. So if you guys don't know what the pattern is, it's like this super cool astrology based app that like reads your fucking mind. Like you're just like, wait a second, how the fuck is this? Like, how do they know? How are they inside my head? Like,
not gonna lie. On many occasions, I have thought to myself, because like I'll get an update just after having texted you, and I'll be like, did Sarah create this app? I'm like, we were just talking about this. What the fuck?
And you're like, damn, the pattern, get the fuck out of my head. Why? You know?
I don't know. It's terrifying, but it's really helpful, especially in times like these of uncertainty. It gives you just like a little bit of self-reassurance, you know?
Definitely.
So, gotta stop saying, you know.
I know. Yeah. And I'm trying so hard to not say, you know, and it's a conscious effort to do it.
All right. So, okay. I'm going to try and see if I can last the rest of this recording without doing it. It's not going to last long, but I'm going to try.
We shall try.
So we talked about secure and anxious attachments. What was the third one?
The last one. Thank you for keeping my ADHD on track. The last one is avoidant, and avoidant people are afraid to create connections with others because it's similar to anxious, but they're afraid of being abandoned. So they disconnect, right? They feel like I don't want to connect with people because of the pain that will happen if they leave me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you have interacted with those people, as have I.
Oh, I can see those archetypes in many people in my lives and in myself. I think I want a secure attachment. I have been anxiously attached to people. Now I might be a bit more avoidant.
I see it. But then I feel like you're like a hybrid of avoidant. Yeah.
I love that.
I feel like I think you're a hybrid of avoidant and anxious because I feel like you want that. Like you desperately want that connection, but you're fearful of what happens if it explodes.
Well, yeah. And it's also, you know, the fact that you don't always know how the other person feels, and there's that really scary, like, oh my God, what if they don't feel the same as me? You know, I just did it. Oh, fuck! Oh, that was such a good, beautiful moment. And then I ruined it. Oh, story of my life.
it's so challenging. I'm trying so hard not to say,
Oh, and I just made that beautiful declaration and I just totally fouled it up. Oh, good job, Joy. Self five.
We are theater people. We should know how to speak without these glitches.
We should be better than this.
Seriously. Red leather, yellow leather, good blood, bad blood.
How now, brown cow?
So my dad sent me a series of three skits that the kids and I were going to do with my parents. It was very cute. And we called them and everybody was on speakerphone and I had to bribe Ari and Samara to do it. I was like, I will get you currency for your games if you do this. But they did it. And then Samara said, are we going to do this every day? And I was like, would you like to do it every day? And she's like, I don't know, which is the tween version of I liked it, but I don't want to admit it.
Yep, basically.
How old are the kids that you work with?
So I work at an elementary school. So they're between kindergarten and fifth grade. I think my oldest student is 12. My youngest is 5.
Oh, wow. What's your favorite age?
Oh, man. I really enjoy, well, the problem is that, like, I like kids in all the grades, but there's always that one kid in each, like, group that I want to kind of kick across the room, you know? So it's hard to say an age group. I just, there are specific personalities and specific kids I like, and I think a lot of it comes down to just, like, maybe their home life and their rearing, I don't know, but you just meet some of the most pleasant, wonderful children, and their parents are equally as wonderful. But then again, you get these really awful kids whose parents are also kind of wonderful, but yeah, at the same time, you're like, what the hell is happening at home that your kid is acting like this?
It's so strange, and it makes you think about the idea of nature versus nurture.
I was just talking about this, oh my gosh, about like whether selfishness is nature or nurture.
I feel like it could be both, because if you think about personality disorders or people that are like murderers, where does that come from? Well, I mean, personality disorders, some of them are innate and some of them are nurture. For example, sociopathy is nurture or lack thereof. And psychopathy is you're just born that way.
Yeah. Well, like, as I was talking to my friend, I brought up like, okay, so are survival instincts selfishness? I mean, I guess they are selfishness, but I think maybe we're selfish up to a point and then we have to learn how to be considerate of others, either that or we just go on being selfish.
Well, I think that the majority of children operate on the principle of id or selfishness because they don't know any better.
Yeah, they're just like, I need, because the parents provide everything for them.
Yeah, and I think that's why we, as a society, should teach empathy in a very clear way at an early age.
Yeah, empathy and consideration. I grew up in a Canadian culture where consideration is everything. So it's just having a mind of the people around you, how are your actions going to affect others, especially now in times of COVID, as we're all talking about with social distancing and hand washing, how are your actions going to affect the people around you? Because I read so many awful, I'm not even reading the stories, I'm just seeing the headlines of people who, out of their own selfish acts, you know, they decide to go and have a party and they decide to start hugging random people, you know, that's so wrong and it's so selfish and rude. You got to consider how that affects everyone, because now people are getting sick, people are dying every day, and I think it's like thousands by the hour in our country at this point. I don't know about the rest of the world. So we need to start teaching our kids now that their actions are going to affect everybody around them, and that's scary, but it's something that needs to be learned. But you don't have to be, you know, mean about it. There are good ways to do it too. Like, some people are like, that sounds so harsh, but it's like, it's not harsh. It's being safe and smart.
It's reality. And I, you know, Samara has gone to do Instacart with me, not a lot of the time, but occasionally during this whole thing, because I don't want her to be by herself. You know, if Neil is not available to watch her, she goes with me. And she sees at the grocery store that everybody has to stand 6 feet away from each other, you know?
Yeah.
It's the reality of what we're dealing with at this time. And it's sad, but it's better that they see it and they abide by it, because they need to understand how scary this time is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But it is very scary. And to me, it's sad that they have to do distance learning in the third grade.
It's really upsetting. I wouldn't want to do online I wouldn't want to do online learning either if I was a kid. It's boring. You don't have the same atmosphere as when your friends are there. When you're learning beside a friend and a companion, it's so much more fun than by yourself in front of a screen with nothing else to occupy your time.
Yeah, and so much, you can see this because you work in a school, so much of the younger grades is socialization.
Absolutely. Basically, my job is social learning with these kids. I work before and after school with, like I said, kindergarten through fifth grade. And a lot of what I'm teaching kids is, you know, social manners, how to be, you know, how to interact with one another in a safe, respectful, responsible, and kind manner. And before, when we were shut down, there was a plan for emergency childcare to happen, and I was going to be a part of that. And my big anxiety throughout all that planning, it got canceled within like a week. We're not doing it. But my anxiety throughout planning all of that is, how do you teach children and occupy their time with one another when they can't be within 6 feet of each other? And all the plans that we came to just reminded me of like prison reform programs, you know?
It's so sad.
Because the plans that we had was, you know, each kid would be at a separate table, like 6 feet or more apart from each other. They're going to have individualized activities that they can do on their own. They'll be able to go outside for half an hour, but again, they can't stand within 6 feet of each other, and we have to wipe down all the balls and the equipment that they use, but they couldn't go on the playground because the playground had caution tape on it.
Oh my God. It's a nightmare. I mean,
I can only imagine the stories that these young kids are going to grow up to tell and the movies that are going to come out of this time. It's going to the most insane creative push in a few years, and I really hope that I'm alive to see it because I think it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to Ari's intensive, in-home therapist. They're called IHAPs. It's a division of Yale. And what they do is they actually come to your home 3 times a week and they do family therapy, individual therapy, and then one-on-one, like individual therapy with the kid and individual therapy with the parent. It's super intense, but it's so revolutionary because they don't really have anything like that in other states.
That is beautiful. I really love that.
It's amazing. And they're so compassionate. And they have been on our side to get the school to kind of do their job, which is amazing. But I said, fuck. but they're great. And what was so sad is that they've been in home with us for the past 6 months, and all of a sudden the pandemic happened. And it's not the same because we're video chatting with them, but it's like talking to robots. And I feel
exactly.
Like, right? It's not fair because so many people and adults and children are having to switch to telemedicine. And I mean, you know, I write for BetterHelp and I extensively, so I like online therapy. I like telemedicine, but if you're doing in-person therapy and you're switching to phone and text therapy, it's a huge jump.
Yeah, when I was in therapy, my therapist, there'd be a few like personal emergencies where like I would email and let them know like I'm having a panic attack, blah, blah, blah. And they would offer to call and video chat. But for me personally, I don't do my best work over the phone or through video just because I don't know how to be my authentic self.
No, exactly. It doesn't feel right. And I feel like I can, okay, on the phone is easier for me with people I don't know very well. Like I could
when you called me originally, I was just out of the shower naked.
Exactly. So, but the thing is, there are certain people, like I could totally video chat with you and I wouldn't give a shit because you're like one of my closest friends. But like other people, it would be weird. Right? Like a clinician or something like that is strange, you know?
Well, yeah, because then I have to think about like, do I want to take this call in my bedroom? Oh God, they're going to see the disaster that my bedroom is. Can't do that. Now I'm going to go into the living room. Oh God, someone is going to hear me talking about my life. I don't want to deal with that. And it becomes this whole like, you know, strategy session of how do I keep this private and be authentic, but don't show them the mess that is my life, you know?
Exactly. But you know, I think there's a lot of that in general where I think we would be surprised at how many people are anxious about things like that and just don't say anything. I think you and I are just very open and we just say it. It's like, oh my God, I'm so anxious. Like, I don't want to go to this thing. I don't want to leave my house, or like, I'm afraid people are going to see my room like this. But a lot of people,
you know, if you think about Facebook and especially Facebook, keeping up appearances and looking like you're not fazed by things is a phenomenon on the internet.
Oh yeah, I got off Facebook in 2018. I have not been on Facebook in over a year, and it has been one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. I don't compare myself to the people that I know anymore, because I know that they likely have problems, but they're just not talking about it. And it just felt so false and gross, and I would feel so bad about myself every time I would go on Facebook, because I would see all these things that other people were doing, and then I would be like, well, why the fuck am I not doing that? And so once I got off that and started living my own life kind of off the screen, it felt like I could breathe, and I started learning things about myself that I didn't recognize before.
Yeah, for sure. So are you deactivated totally?
Admittedly, no. I have gotten back on Twitter. I was off Twitter for a while, not because I was like boycotting or anything, but just because like I didn't have anything to say. But now that we're in the time of Corona, I've got things that I can say now. So I tweet a little bit. It's nothing exciting. I'm more active on Instagram because I paint and I connect with artists on there, and I actually make friends on there. Actually, I make some of my best friends have been made through social media, i.e. you, who I met through Twitter.
Yay. I know, seriously, like, I feel like the thing about Twitter and the phenomenon with it is that we can be authentic on Twitter. Facebook is super fake, but Twitter, you could just, it's like finding people who you relate to that you could just be yourself. It's like walking around in your underwear, you know?
Yeah, I follow a lot of funny celebrities, and so it's a great place just to get like a good laugh and also to see other viewpoints and also learn something. Like today, I posted, and I'm going to admit to this, I retweeted something that was super insensitive, and I wasn't even thinking about it at the time. And when I came back to my phone, I saw that there was an argument between somebody who's a close friend of mine and the person who originated the tweet about kind of like the insensitivity and tonelessness of the tweet. And I immediately undid the retweet, and I sent a message to my friend who was upset saying, I am so sorry. I definitely was not thinking when I posted that, but I totally get why you feel the way you do. And I think it's nice to be able to be able to stop myself and go, oh my God, I should be thinking before I do things. And so it's nice to be able to be humbled, but also connect and have fun.
That's the thing, is that there are so many instances where I've done the same thing. I've like put my foot in my mouth on Twitter, and I feel like we've all done that, because it's not all of us, but many of us have done this because it's so freeing to just talk into the void and then forget that people are actually reading what you write, you know? And then,
well, and like, you don't consider all of the angles of what's being said sometimes. Sometimes I just like vaguely read something and I'm just like, huh, clever. And I just hit retweet without thinking. And then, you know, I realize later, oh my gosh, this is actually incredibly offensive and tone deaf. Why the hell did it? And so, you know, and I felt really, really bad. And so it was important to me that I reached out and apologized. And we did. And so, but it was a good reminder for me just to like, I'm not going to get in any fights. I've been in enough fights over the internet, but you know, I got to be aware of what's the message that I am sending out right now, you know? Yeah. I just said, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But I was about to say, you know, there are internet fights are so stressful because it's so difficult to resolve them. There's a lot of like waiting for the person to respond to you. If they're that, let's, you know, sometimes they walk away, and you know, I think you and I are hypervigilant about responding to people. And when you're in an internet fight, you don't know what the person is thinking or doing, and it like provokes anxiety, and you're like, oh shit, they're so mad, they're not gonna be my friend anymore, and you can't instantly resolve it.
Well, and then a lot of these personalities, the people who like actually enjoy instigating these fights and such, you know, troll culture, if you will, they're just they're so awful and they feel no remorse, and you know that they don't feel bad at all about what they're saying, but there's a part of you that wants so bad to teach them a lesson, and so it just, and it eggs you on, and then you don't end up feeling good about yourself. You just end up feeling angry and resentful and hurt, and it just, it's frustrating. So you got to be able to take a step back and ask yourself, you know, what good is going to come out of this?
Definitely. Oh wow, Hannah Baker is trending on Twitter. Have you seen 13 Reasons Why?
No, it's a bit of a trigger thing for me. I can't watch that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the first season and I started the second season. I was not impressed with the second season. I think a lot of it is shock value.
I mean, I know kind of what happens, and I respect the messages that are being sent and that they're trying to talk about. It's good that we talk about these things, but it's just one of those things, like with I can't watch. There are a lot of shows that I watch because I'm not comfortable with the stuff that I see.
Definitely. I think that, you know, you're a sensitive person. I'm a sensitive person. It's difficult to, you have to be careful about what you internalize or what you take in. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I absolutely agree.
We are out of time, but
oh my gosh, that flew by.
No, seriously. I'm so excited to share this with the world. But where can people find you on Twitter?
It's very easy. I'm just at Joy Pearson, and that's Pearson. Like the family from This Is Us, but it's not a fan account. I had the name before the show was invented.
Yes, and actually Joy is incredibly talented as a fine artist, and if you are interested in seeing her work, what is your Instagram?
It's A Little Self Joy. I came up with this idea of self joy not too long ago. I'm probably not the only person who's thought of it, but it was just something that I was thinking in a non-pun manner that people need to, you know, foster their own fun and happiness instead of depending on getting it from others. So, I'm very much about finding my own happiness by myself. So I post a lot about that.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I'll be calling you probably in, I don't know, a minute.
But for now, internet, I will talk to you whenever Sarah lets me back on here.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.